Welcome to this week's Some Other Scotland headline newscast with me, Mick Burdey. Palace plans found in park. A set of agricultural drawings of the Palace of Holyrood House, the Queen's official residence in Scotland, have been found in a footpath in the Roseburn area of Edinburgh. Security around the palace has been increased and a full investigation has been launched into the source of the document. The plans were found by a journalist who was walking her dog along the path leading to the Water of Leith. The plans appear to show the whole of the palace, including the private quarters of the royal family, and have now been returned to security staff. A spokesperson said, "We acknowledge this has been a security breach, which we are taking very seriously and are currently investigating." Salmon disease hits Scottish shores. Infectious salmon anemia, ISA, a disease which affects farmed salmon, has returned to Scottish shores 10 years after the last outbreak created several problems for many fish farmers. The disease has been confirmed at one site and suspected in another two within the Burra area of Shetland. Movement restrictions have been placed on the three sites and investigators from the Fisheries Research Service will be reporting and advising on the situation shortly. Whilst the disease is highly infectious, it does not affect humans. Missing man found. A Polish man feared drowned after being reported as a missing person earlier in the week has been found alive and well, following searches by the Coast Guard, RAF, local lifeboat and the police. Mr. Stazevich, from Dundee, had last been seen on a beach at Montrose, prompting the concerns that he might have been lost at sea. Scotland's loony dookers get chilly. The annual plunge into the Forth to celebrate the passing into a new year, affectionately known as loony dooking, had almost 600 participants this year, surpassing previous records. The event is now regularly used for fundraising, and many of the attendees now enter the chilly water wearing a range of fancy dress costumes, from superheroes to pirates, as well as the more traditional bathing costumes, trunks, bikinis and thongs. Jumping into perishingly cold winter seas or rivers is a common way of celebrating the new year, but the event on the 4th is by far the largest and most organised in Scotland. Some Other Scotland by Mick Bourdais. Episode 1. Sykes rolled his eyes as he reached the end of the first page of the document lying open in front of him. As if the pile of unfinished paperwork on his desk wasn't large enough, now he had to deal with the palace security. They were certainly thorough. Nobody would dispute that fact. Some of them were the finest in the business, certainly within Scotland, and a couple of them he had known personally as they rose through the ranks of the police before moving on to grander things. He was amazed that a breach of security like this could ever have happened, in any circumstances, but certainly not as casually and carefree as this latest situation would suggest. For a complete set of plans to turn up in a public park where anybody could have found them was almost inexplicable. Any part-time crook with half a brain would know the value of something like this, so why abandon it in this manner? This case would, no doubt, turn out to be an interesting one for Sykes and his team, but the layers of bureaucracy involved in an investigation like this made it a tiresome process, trying to cut through so much red tape that appeared to serve only to get tangled around everything. He was used to dealing with liars, murderers, thieves and fraudsters to reach his conclusions, even with the accepted level of police paperwork, but not with pen-pushing frilly-collared public schoolboys, providing a range of unnecessary obstacles to a job that was already hard enough. The report he just read was from the head of security at the Palace of Holyrood House. A detailed description of the findings from their initial inquiries into the source and circumstances of the missing plans. The first point he'd noted was that the plans hadn't even been missing. There was a stringent set of controls for the architectural drawings of the palace. All locked in safes, all recorded against reference numbers, signed off every time a set was taken for use by a contractor. There were extracts from the master plans of individual room drawings to be used for smaller jobs, so that the builders or other workers in those rooms didn't need to have access to details for the rest of the building. The security team had confirmed that every control was still in place, every document where it should have been, with nothing to suggest that a complete set of plans had even been viewed for years, the set in the safe having a fine veneer of dust testifying to this fact. It was not a photocopy that had been found, but a hand-drawn original floor plan, which was something else to worry about. Whilst certain areas of the palace were open to the public, so that anyone with an eye for detail and the technical skills to draw plans could have come up with a reasonable set of plans, Large areas of the palace were accessible only to certain members of staff, with the appropriate level of security vetting. This would suggest that it was either an inside job, or somebody had managed to evade detection for long enough to creep around the whole building, gathering measurements as they went. He continued reading the wordy report, taking occasional gulps of the lukewarm black coffee that had been left by one of his team half an hour previously. By the time he reached the last page and closed it over, he was more puzzled than he'd been before he opened it. Where he had expected to find answers, or at the very least some factual evidence that he could use to kick-start the investigation, he found only watertight security measures that had been breached by a person or persons unknown. He picked up his phone and dialed the number on the first inside page of the report.
Callum, it's Jim Sykes.
Hello, James, good to hear from you. It's been a while. How's that fine lady of yours?
Asked the friendly baritone voice on the other end of the line.
Not mine anymore, and not so fine as it turns out. She buggered off about 6 months ago with a joint account and some wee nyaff from her bloody Pilates class.
Sorry about that, fella. Tactless of me, I hadn't heard. How are you managing?
Well, the house is damn quiet. Kinda get used to that part of it. I miss the company. Somebody to talk to about life outside the force, you can. The stuff that's supposed to matter. I'm spending more and more time on the job. Not a great idea, maybe, but there's nothing dragging me home. Anyway, time heals and all that pish. I'm okay.
He answered, not entirely convinced by his own explanation.
You should come over to ours for a drama too some night. We do enjoy your company. I presume that's not why you're calling, though. I take it you've got my report.
Aye, it's just landed on my desk. Looks like your lads are all in the clear, but I've got some questions for you, if that's okay.
There was a pause. Callum Haston was a quick thinker, one of those people who always seemed to be two or three steps ahead of anyone they were talking to. So it was unusual for him to pause for anything. Sykes had been his commanding officer in CID only 5 years earlier, though for less than a year before promotion called, and within another year he'd been headhunted by one of the big multinationals, before eventually picking up the job with the Crown. He knew Callum would already have given this matter considerable thought, so there'd be no point in pressing him. He waited for the answer, knowing it would come in time.
Yes, of course you do, old man. I'm just not sure I have any answers. Everything we know about it is in there. I don't know where else to look. No evidence, no apparent motive, and no opportunity that we can identify. I'd appreciate it if you could have a look, see if there's anything we've missed. The PR bods here are jumping up and down for a story, or, failing that, a scapegoat. Somebody's head will roll, and I'd rather it not be mine, said Callum.
His voice, despite its natural resonant strength and clarity, was starting to show signs of stress. Little lapses in his refined accent at the end of the odd word here and there, betraying his East Glasgow roots.
Sure, give me half an hour and I'll see you at the front gate. I'll be honoured to say I cracked a case that had even Supercop Hastings stumped, Sykes replied.
It was over an hour later, having made their way through several security checks, and along a warren of long corridors lined with anonymous plain doors, that the two men sat in Callum's office, ready to discuss the team's findings in full detail. Sykes placed his copy of the document on the large solid oak desk between the former colleagues and took a deep breath to gather himself before speaking.
I was over at the site where the plans were found this morning. Not a thing there. The woman that found them has given a full statement, but nothing of interest to us.
Bloody typical it was a member of the press, though. I don't like them knowing more than we do, especially right at the start of a case.
Any chance of seeing the evidence itself? He asked.
I thought you'd ask that. Hang on a minute,
Callum answered. He took a key from his pocket and opened a small safe in the wall behind his desk, pulling out a polythene evidence bag containing a folded set of papers. He opened the bag, removing the contents, and laid the plans out across the desktop.
The lab boys have done their stuff, but I'm never comfortable touching evidence, even after they've given the all clear, you know. That's it. The cause of one hell of a lot of fuss.
And it's accurate?
Sykes asked.
To the nearest inch or two, as far as we can see. We tried comparing it with about 8 or 9 different rooms, all bang on scale. We got the palace architect to look it over too. You've seen the report. It wasn't one of his, but he did say it was drawn by somebody with a good knowledge of architecture. Something to do with details that appeared on here that were correctly annotated
despite being fairly esoteric. Little things that not even your above-average man on the street would have considered. "Take a look at some of these lines," Callum said, pointing to a series of pencilled borders indicating walls on the plan.
"Hand-drawn? Geez, someone's got a steady hand, eh? It looks like the whole plan's been drawn without a ruler, or anything other than a pencil and maybe a laser measure."
Callum nodded. Sykes pored over the plan, taking in every detail he could, looking for something that would show a reason for this to exist. A target to be stolen or attacked, perhaps. Callum stood up, meanwhile, and walked over to the door.
"Fancy a tea or coffee? Looks like you'll be a while working through that lot."
"Please. Black coffee. Strong as you can get."
"I'll need to lock you in with that thing, okay?"
Sykes grunted and nodded his head without looking up. There was something that was registering his subconscious, just out of sight, setting his senses on edge. He changed his position, stretching back to look from a distance, then returning closer, half-closing his eyes to blur his vision. He tried to vary his focus, looking past the plan, trying to recreate the technique required to look at the hidden eye pictures once so popular. Janice, his ex, had brought him three of the wretched things for presents before he eventually worked out the knack for seeing the 3D image appear from what seemed to the untrained eye little more than chaos. That didn't help either. He stood up and started walking a slow route around the table. His eye kept fixed on the area of the plan in the centre that had somehow snagged his attention. He knew it was there, that flaw in the detail that would point to something or someone. He hoped. Callum returned to the room, holding two chunky, steaming mugs in his left hand, as he removed the key from outside the door. He put the mugs down in a filing cabinet next to where Sykes stood, still concentrating on the paper stretched out across the desk.
"No joy?"
"Nope. Sod all I can see, but there's a hidden layer to it. I can feel it, but damned if I can work it out," said Sykes, finally raising his eyes to look at Callum.
"Take a break for a minute. Here's your coffee." "Still drinking it cold?" Callum asked.
"Aye, but more of it these days. Needed extra caffeine to replace the ciggies in my diet. Bloody smoking ban. I was getting out of breath with the constant trek from my office to the back door of the station, so I had to let them go."
Callum smiled. In his time working with Sykes, he constantly pointed out the dangers of smoking three packs of cigarettes every day, as much for his own health as out of concern for his boss. He thought back to the smoke haze that was a constant feature of their office, and the hours of moaning from his girlfriend at the time, when he would return home with clothes reeking of stale smoke.
"I'm on this stuff these days. Green tea. Much better for you. Full of antioxidants." "So they tell me," he said, giving the liquid in his mug a stir and lifting out the teabag with its attached string.
Sykes laughed at the sight of the tall and muscular man performing this delicate operation.
"Hey, don't knock the oxidants. They're the buggers keeping me together."
They both sat back in their chairs and talked for a while about the old days, about cases they'd worked on, about criminals they'd locked up, who had now served their time and were back out in the public. As they talked, they both kept glancing at the plan, hoping to spot a clue unexpectedly out of the corner of their eyes, or for it all to come together now they'd relaxed a little. Callum was in the midst of recounting a tale of his time in the private sector when he became aware of Sykes's gaze, having settled in one point to the extent that he was now staring.
"What have you spotted?" he said.
Sorry, what was that?"
Sykes said, pulled back into awareness by Callum's question. He'd been looking at the string attached to Callum's teabag, looped around and hanging over the edge of the bin.
"You looked like you'd seen something. Your eyes were glazing over."
"I don't know. That string over there seemed to make a connection, the way it's looped over itself." "Weird," he answered.
Sykes looked back at the plan, revisiting the area that had caused him concern, and then over at the looped string once more. Realization struck him.
"You're having me on. What the hell?"
he asked, directing his question to the plan rather than to Callum, then pointing at the representation of a long wall in one room.
Look at this section. See that little loop he's made there? It's almost imperceptible, but it's definitely a tiny wee loop."
"Right. I see it, but
why? Why has he put that there? I can see plenty of places where the lines aren't exact, but if his measurements are so accurate and his hand drawing so skilled, why would he let a little ether like that stay? Now, look here. Another one in the room behind that one."
"Damn it, old man, you're right," Callum responded. "Those are function rooms, both of them. They only get used a few times a year, usually for meals after state events or for visiting dignitaries.
Callum jumped to his feet, opened a drawer in his desk, lifted out a measuring tape and held it over the area they'd been focused on. 3 metres from the side wall for both of them. Come on.
They left the room once Callum had lifted the plan and folded it back into the clear plastic bag, him leading the way at a brisk pace, his long straight strides showing a hint of his army training from his time before joining the police.
They arrived at the first of the two rooms about 5 minutes later, having passed halfway around the main building and up 2 flights of stairs. The room was elegantly decorated to modern tastes, unlike some of the more traditionally regal rooms they'd passed through on their way, with subtly patterned dark wallpaper and a deep red carpet. It was empty apart from a large walnut credenza in the middle of one wall and 2 piles of stacking chairs left beside the door. Callum took the measuring tape from his pocket and quickly measured 3 metres out from the side wall, then began feeling the wall around the point the tape had reached, running his hands over the embossed wallpaper in ordered rows, as though reading Braille.
"Bastards!" he shouted, making Sykes step back in surprise.
Callum reached into his jacket pocket for his penknife, opened it up and rammed the blade into the wall where he'd stopped his search. Sykes watched on, unclear as to what his friend had found in the wall, until the knife was withdrawn, bringing with it a small black tube about the size of a pen that had been broken in half.
"Damned covert cameras. We do regular sweeps for these things. They're always turning up in the gardens and occasionally even hidden in some of the rooms closer to the public areas. I don't know how these could have slipped through our checks or how anyone could get this far into the palace, let alone manage to install these things in walls as solid as these. Unless they were an invited guest, I suppose, but we have scans for this sort of equipment," Callum said, his hand red from the tight grip he held in the little black cylinder. He stormed out of the room, along the corridor, and into the room behind, where he removed an identical device from the other side of the wall.
"Looks like the plans were only the tip of the iceberg, James. We have got a serious problem."
The music from this podcast is from the track No Strings Attached by The Lunacy Board, who can be found at www.lunacyboard.com. The podcast is produced under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 license, which means, in a nutshell, that you can copy it ad infinitum, email it to your friends, stick it on your webpage or your MP3 player or iPod, anything you like. Just so long as you don't change it in any way, you don't make money from it, and you let people know where it has come from originally. someotherscotland.podbean.com.